comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet, thanks for being here at Talk Radio like nowhere else on Earth. We're here because you matter and because you have a right to know. In keeping with our very firm belief that you matter and you have a right to know, we publish a weekly newsletter called The K-Files. It's free, absolutely free, not Washington, D.C. free. It's really free, no strings attached. And all you have to do is go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and when you get to my website, you'll see right in the middle of your screen, in big, bold letters, the word K-Files. Well, if you click that, you can subscribe, and you're going to get a confirmation email. You have a link in that email that you have to use to activate your subscription so you will begin to receive the K-Files, okay? So be sure you do that. You can do it right now. And if you don't like the K-Files, you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. The K-Files goes out on Friday. So immediately after the show tonight, we begin sending it out. If you subscribe and if you activate your subscription prior to the end of the show tonight, then you'll receive this week's edition. So be sure you do that. You know, we've all heard these stories, these rumors, these reports suggesting that there is a secret space program, a secret military space program, a program that's way ahead of NASA, both in technology and in accomplishments. Sometimes people wonder if that's true, that we have a secret space program. And the fact is, of course it's true. Of course it's true. We don't know everything that's in this secret space program, but we know it exists because you can see where information runs off into black holes in budgets and things like that. And where the information disappears, well, there's usually a black project hiding back there behind it somewhere. So, of course, we have a secret space program. And really, the military doesn't even try to keep it a secret that we have a secret space program. But they do try and succeed pretty well at keeping secret what's in that secret space program. Gary McKinnon said he found information about an American space fleet while tiptoeing through the tulips of the government computers. Joanne Richards, who's been here on this show, has told us that her husband formerly was the commander of an Orion-class spaceship belonging to the U.S. Navy. Now, these stories sound pretty fantastic. I understand. But sometimes, fantastic things turn out to be true. So are these stories true about the secret space fleet? Well, Gordon Gianinotto joins us for part three of our conversation tonight. And we're going to be talking about these stories, among other things. So you want to be sure you stay tuned. He'll be with us right after this, so hang around. welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest, as I said at the top of the show, is Gordon Giannotto. This is part three of our conversation with him. And tonight we are going to get into some things off-world quite a bit. And I think you will find what he's got to say, more than interesting. Gordon, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Well, let's see. If I ever learn to run this thing. There we go. Now we've got volume for you. Welcome back.
Okay. I said thank you very much. I'm very glad to be here, and I'm glad to see that your listeners are listening to me, because in your last show last night, you had a viewer who took some pictures of Planet X next to the sun. And I've been telling you, you can do that, and if you join shift.com and send them in to them, they're very happy to receive them, because there are a lot of people waiting for those pictures. That's the home of those pictures.
And say again the name of the home of those pictures?
It's a Zeta Talk site where you can ask questions to the extraterrestrials yourself. So it's a very interesting place to be. It's called PoleShift.ning. I have no idea what a ning is. PoleShift.ning.com.
Good enough. We'll talk about those pictures in just a minute, but I want to get your response to this. You mentioned Zeta Talk before, and we had people who sent me email and said they went to Zeta Talk, and they were impressed with the tremendous amount of information that is there, but they're not sure really whether they think they trust channeled information. What would you say to that?
Well, I agree with them. Channeled information, on the whole, is a pretty sorry thing. Probably the last 30 years, I've read more channeled information than anybody. And most of it I could write with my eyes closed, making up stuff in 5 minutes. So I tend to agree, but I will say that it's a thin line between channeled and telepathic. But Zeta Talk is telepathic information. And I myself have had extraterrestrials speak to me in my mind, similar to somebody standing next to me and speaking to me that clearly. Except that it did not come in through my ears, it came in through my head. And I'll tell you right now, if you reach your finger behind either ear, you'll notice there's a crescent-shaped bone right behind the ear. You flap the flap of the ear, you go behind the flap of the ear, and then down to your skull, there's a crescent-shaped bone on either side. That's where telepathic information is received.
All right, so now, do you hear it?
Nancy at Zeta Talk, that is telepathic information. They actually implanted some things in her head so that she would be able to do this. And she sits at a typewriter, and they actually, typewriter. She sits at a computer, a keyboard, and they telepathically dictate the answers to questions asked by the public like you and me.
Okay, now when you say you receive telepathic information, and that's where it comes in, how does that happen? I mean, do you hear it, or
It's like hearing it. It's exactly like hearing it, except that if somebody's in the room listening, they don't hear anything.
Okay. You said there's a fine line between telepathic and channeled. How do you tell the difference, and what is the difference?
That's a really good question, too. And the thing is I don't want to put anybody down in particular, but there's a sorry state of people who are channeling groups that they call them. They call these extraterrestrial groups, and they say, you know, if we just hum a few bars and chant and have some happy thoughts, that Planet X is not going to bring pole shift. that's what I mean about worthless information, because you can go down to the shore, you can go down to the shore and you could stand there and hum all you want. You can't keep the tide from coming in. Planet X is a natural event every 3,657 years. So you can't hum it and chant it away. I mean, you know.
Okay, so what you're saying is the telepathic information really sort of comports more with reality than channeled information.
I think so. I think that's a fair way to analyze the whole field. And you test Nancy because she gives predictions. I mean, she has said things. That website started in 1995. So she's been doing it for free. There's a great program that you can get for free on the internet called H-Track. And anyone that's interested in saving an entire website, you get H-Track for free, then you go click on the website, you enter the address, and it will download the entire website to your computer. So Zeta Talk has so much stuff about the pole shift and the different areas and maps and pictures that people have sent in and so much stuff. 39,000 separate web pages in that one site that I used H-Track to download it, and that's how come I know there's 39,000 pages there, because it gives a report of what it downloaded. It was about 700 megabytes.
Okay. Now, you and I talked about this show that I did last night, and you watched the show last night. And I want to – I've gotten lots of response since the show. And I want to be sure that I clarify something for folks, and then I want to get your impression of it, because that's going to be the jumping-off point from which we take our leap into the space fleet and all that stuff, okay? So
yes.
Here's what I want to clarify for folks. I got several emails, four or five emails from people who were telling me, you know, they're very polite, very kind. Boy, it was a very interesting show. It was a great show. However, NASA already has addressed that object, and they sent me a link. And I appreciate that. Now, in this particular case, a lot of times I have not seen the link that you send me. In this particular case, I had in doing my research for the show. For those who have no idea what I'm talking about, let me summarize. Let me just put a picture up on our screen. This object that was photographed by the Core 2A camera, this object is what NASA addressed. And they said, and they had a picture up there, and what they say is, that this has been the subject of a lot of speculation, and people have been saying it's a giant object near the sun. But alas, it is only a fiber that has found its way onto the lens of the camera. Now, first, I want you folks to remember where this camera is. This camera is in space. Way out in space between us and the sun. It's way out there. And it found a fiber? Okay. Well, if I'm going to buy that it found the fiber, understand that these photographs are from the Core 2A camera on the SOHO system. The Core 2A camera is not run by NASA. It's not run by anybody else except the Naval Research Laboratory and their operation called SECHI, S-E-C-C-H-I. So the information that downloads from this camera downloads to the Naval Research Laboratory operation SECHI. It doesn't download to NASA. But NASA had this explanation up. On board SOHO, there are a bunch of cameras, and they operate in various spectrum, and they are for a lot of different reasons. But there is the Core 2A and 2B, and the Core 1A and 1B that belong to the Naval Research Laboratory. So here we have a picture of this thing out there next to the sun. If this is a fiber on the lens of the Core 2A camera, we should not see it on any other camera. Does that make sense? I think it does. If it's a fiber on the lens of that camera, we should see it only when we're looking at photographs from that camera. But last night I played for you a little video. Now this little video is made up of a whole bunch of still pictures, and they were lined up and then in a video editing program lined up side by side and then processed so that what you get is the motion. It looks like a moving picture, okay? And so what we're looking at has that object in it, and that's not from the Core 2A camera. Now, if memory serves me correctly, and it may not, I think this is the LASCO camera. But it is, regardless, it is a completely different, separate camera. So the question I've got, if that's a fiber on the Core 2A camera lens, do they expect us to buy, to believe, that the exact same fiber is on this other camera lens too?
What you pointed out, Kevin, is typical of NASA. They have photographs that are completely at isolation, or there's an explanation absent entirely.
Yeah. Well, you know, the point is that I'm not saying I know what that object is, but what I'm saying is if that's a fiber on the lens of the Core 2A camera, there is an identical twin on the lens of this other camera. Identical. And I mean identical. And for those who are watching, let me show you what I mean about identical, because I'm going to put a still shot up. This is from the Core, the LASCO camera, the one that did the little video that I just showed. And now we'll take a look at one from Core 2A. They are identical objects. Identical objects. So we're supposed to buy that this fiber is on the exact same fiber is on two different camera lenses. Okay, so I think, folks, you will understand why I don't buy that story. There are things easier to buy than a story like that. Now, some people say, and I've heard it, to say there's something that large up next to the sun, that's just so fantastic. Who could believe it? Well, you can believe that an exact copy, an exact twin of a fiber out in space, a fiber, and an exact twin is on two different camera lenses. You can buy that. So while I cannot say that I know what that object is, Gordon, I don't know what that object is. I think I can say it's not a fiber on the Core 2A lens. That story doesn't fit.
Your logic is flawless.
Well, I don't know if my logic is flawless, but I think NASA's logic is definitely flawed to tell us that's a fiber when it shows up on different cameras. It's just unbelievable.
Well, they have two satellites, and one is ahead of the Earth in its orbit, and one is behind the Earth's orbit, and that's how they get these so-called stereo views. Mm-hmm. So these cameras aren't even next to each other. They aren't even on the same space probe. I don't even know how many hundreds of thousands of miles apart, or possibly millions of miles.
Okay. Now let me ask you, you're right about that. Now let me ask you this. What do you surmise that this object may be?
Well, I agree with you completely in the first instance that whatever it is shouldn't be there. By all we know, there should not be something like that next to the sun.
Okay, and let me ask you to set back from your mic just a little bit because the audio is kind of clipping because it's a little bit too much for the mic. Okay, so yeah, it should not be there. Do you have any idea what it might be?
You know, it's funny. When I first looked at it, when you were describing it, well, that looks like a rat in space. Like, I can see its two eyes and its nose. All these pieces, some whiskers, and I'm thinking, well, that's really odd. Think of this, something the size of the moon or larger. I mean, it's hard to tell the scale because we don't know the distance. From the picture, we see that it appears that the solar flare is to this object. So it's probably on the other side of the sun. And at various perspectives, looking for recognition of common objects, it also looks like maybe the head of a sheep. It looks like maybe a bust, like there was a giant statue and the head rolled off. But then when you look closer, you see that there has been, it appears that there was some manipulation of the image to eliminate detail of some sort. And yeah, it definitely appears to be, I guess, you know, if you look at the moon of Mars, and which is Phobos, and it looks like a giant potato, this thing looks like maybe a bigger version, you know, like a giant Idaho potato or a potato or whatever. But on the other hand, you know, with you highlighting the help of your listeners, it seems to have other details that's very compelling, like structures on it. There are shapes on it. They really can't be explained. And that's, I find all the time with NASA, if they have something, like they've taken pictures, because the Earth has stopped in its orbit, if you do a planetarium chart of where the planets are, then you should have, when you take a picture of the sun, you should have, let's say, Saturn behind it. But Saturn's not behind it in the picture. So they've been caught inserting Saturn into the picture. And they do a crude job of it. I don't think they're paying these retouchers enough money because they've got different scale of pixels all around Saturn. And oof, there it is. You know, people...
Okay, Gordon, we have to step away for a break. Ladies and gentlemen, we shall return with Gordon Gianinotto right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Gordon Gianinotto. And Gordon, what I'd like for us to do is sort of use this object that we've been talking about as our jumping-off point. And the link to what we're talking about is that these pictures that we've been talking about were taken by the Core 2A camera that is run by the Naval Research Laboratory, the Navy. The link is that the Navy has a huge interest in space. We think of the Navy as being all out there on the ocean and under the ocean, and they're all about the water. That's what we think. But here is living proof that the Navy has a space program, and we've just looked at part of the Navy space program. It's not a secret part. So we get to see the pictures, but the fact that the pictures exist and the fact that it's on a camera being run, taken by a camera being run by the Naval Research Laboratory, tells us the Navy has an interest in space. So what do you know about that? And hang on just a second. Let me get... I'm going to do something to try and adjust this where perhaps we won't have the audio clipping. Okay, go ahead.
You're absolutely right. But the discouraging thing, the depressing thing to hear about this is that basically, and don't forget what I'm about to tell you, the Navy owns NASA, and the CIA owns the Navy.
Well, okay, now you're going to have to explain that one.
Well,
how does the CIA own the Navy? The Navy is part of, they are authorized in the Constitution. The CIA is not. So how does the CIA own the Navy?
Money.
Okay, elaborate on that.
Well, you see, you think, and we all thought, and I thought, even up to a couple of months ago, that there was a basic desire to explore the universe, and we were spending money to extend our knowledge and benefit humanity and mankind, and we are going to the moon, and we're exploring space, and we've got the Hubble Space Telescope just taking these incredible pictures, and it's all for the common scientific knowledge. But it isn't. The entire space program from the word go, and this is before Roswell. There were contact with extraterrestrials in the 30s and 40s before Roswell. People have to understand that. And the MJ-12 was formed at that time. MJ-12 was formed well before World War II. And the entire purpose from the very beginning was to create a safe place for the elite to escape pole shift.
How do you know that? By what means do we know this to be a fact?
Well, if you go to Zeta Talk, they have a wonderful Google search on their website, which is just for their website, and you can look up this stuff. But it's clear that that we have been lied to since the very beginning. And these lies, you've got to look at all of them. They're in every single area of the space program. And the only reason for it is because there's a secret government that is trying to scare us into being scared of extraterrestrials and trying to keep an area of this space and this work to save the wealthy and elite, the powerful, the military-industrial complex, the titans of industry, the bankers, and be able to allow them to come back to Earth after pole shift as the kings of the Earth. So
okay,
the
now
Navy is an instrument here, and the Navy is, as the hacker in England found out by hacking into the Pentagon, which you just mentioned, he discovered lists of Navy off-Earth ships with their entire crews, all the men on all the different levels, with their pay scales. That's why the United States government is trying to extradite him from the UK and lock him up probably in solitary for the rest of his life. But the beautiful thing is that the UK has decided to move towards disclosure, and they do not want to send him back here.
Okay, now you mentioned that this is all so the elite can escape the Earth. That would, I think, presuppose that they've got some place to go to. Wouldn't just float around in space for a while. Do they have some place to go?
No, that's the beauty of it. If there's pole shift and everybody else is going to be without any food, clothing, or shelter, and they're going to have to roll up their sleeves and go to work, the elite are going to have to as well.
Okay, but if they get on their spaceships and leave Earth, then they're out there floating around in the secret spaceships that we are supposed to have. Then when they come back, why would they have to roll up their sleeves and go to work? I mean,
they aren't going to come back because they aren't going to leave because there are no spaceships that can survive pole shift.
Okay, so let's back up, and I thought we had secret spaceships that can survive pole shift. Okay, so do we have a secret space fleet? McKinnon says yes.
Oh, definitely. And you want to know, everybody who's listening to this program is very, very familiar with West Point trains the Army, that's the officers, and Annapolis trains the Navy, and Colorado Springs trains the Air Force. But there's a secret military academy or a secret military program that trains the pilots, and that is at Vandenberg Air Force Base.
Okay, you were breaking up some, but I think you said Vandenberg Air Force Base.
Yes, that's where the pilots, the Navy ships, were trained.
Okay. The pilots of the Navy ships, we're talking about spaceships, right?
Yes.
Describe for us, if you will, this secret fleet that we have. What do you know about it?
Well, I don't know a lot, but I do know that we were manufacturing things at Area 51, but I've been told, and operations to manufacture them were moved into the British Columbia and into Mexico in the mountains, but I have no idea. But I will tell you about one spaceship that is pretty well acknowledged by a lot of people, and that's called the Aurora. And the Aurora uses a scramjet engine to accelerate to 38,000 miles an hour off a runway. And it's based in the Diego Garcia in the Pacific Ocean, which is a little island owned by the U.S. Navy, conveniently, 2,000 miles from anything. And I was very interested in that because I have seen diagrams of the Aurora, and it looks a little egg-shaped if you stunted either at pointed end of the egg and made it a little flatter. That's what it looks like. And it's been rumored that it takes off from Diego Garcia, but what really interested me, Kevin, and it just blew my mind, was remember at the beginning of the 2003 invasion of Iraq, Bush had a lot of embedded reporters?
Yeah.
Well, they had some reporters who were flying into the war zone from the southeast, and one of their stops, their last stops before they went to a closer location, was Diego Garcia, and they were doing an interview of the reporters were doing their piece with the cameras rolling as they flew over and into Diego Garcia. And in the background on the runways were a line of these hangars. These hangars are huge, and they're that exact shape, egg-shaped, with a stunted nose and either end being stunted a little bit, flattened. And I saw that, and I was like, you've got to be kidding.
So you think that those are hangars for the Aurora?
Yes.
All right.
I have to believe they have anti-gravity ships, and that if they do, they're manufactured in the mountains of British Columbia or in the mountains of Mexico, because they're the government of the United States, and they need a close location. If they can't manufacture in the United States, they've got to have a location where they're accessible to people in the United States.
Okay, now McKinnon says that he found these lists of ships and their crews and their pay grade and so forth. So, you know, if McKinnon is telling the truth, then we have at least one fleet out in space, right?
See, it's so hard to, you know, if we just could look it up, it'd be one thing, you know, but the Zetas won't talk a lot about this stuff because they're focused on pole shift and helping people survive. And if you at all are interested in that subject, that's where you want to go because there's so much useful information there.
Okay, but let's stick with the fleet.
Completely.
Yeah, let's stick with the fleet.
We're also in touch with extraterrestrials.
All right, now wait a minute. Wait. We have to stick with the fleet. Let's get this answered. He says there is a fleet, and
yes,
you're telling us there's not a fleet that can survive pole shift. Right. So what's the story? How do we resolve this?
I don't know how we resolve it, but a clue is when some of the wealthiest people in the world are suddenly giving their money to foundations, which, as you know, when was the last time a foundation benefited you or anyone else that you know? But it looks good. It's like the elite, the titans of industry, are reading Zeta Talk, and they're realizing nobody's going to rescue them. So they're thinking, if extraterrestrials are going to help the unselfish people, the kind, empathetic people, then if these people are really kind, aren't they going to help us too? So now they're trying to hang on the coattails of look good to the public. Like, I'm a real humanitarian, and I set up a foundation to teach reading to people around the world. If I didn't have any food, you'd give me some, wouldn't you?
Okay. So do we have a fleet or not?
Well, that's what I'm about to say is, there are rumors that, if you remember Skylab?
Yes.
They said it was getting moldy and it was mildewed and it was, and they had to crash it into the Pacific.
Right.
Because it wasn't good for anything anymore. I think it's pretty well agreed by people who hear these rumors and talk to these people like I have that that was shot down by the Russians or the Soviets.
Okay,
and it was
Skylab.
Like a wake-up call. And if we wanted to spy on the Soviet Union and we wanted to have a Cold War with them, it wouldn't matter what we put in space, they were going to destroy it. And this is the part that you might at first find hard to understand, but if you think about it, you'll realize it's been true. We have been partners in space with the Russians, regardless of what was happening on the ground, since 1973.
Well, at least since then, yeah. Maybe
and
before.
It's rumored that we have a separate space station that never gets discussed, that's outside the orbit of Mars. And that's what Aurora does. It flies twice a week to the secret Russian United States space station on the other side of Mars.
Okay, and so what would that space station be up to? What's it doing out there?
They're scared. Rocks are coming through the solar system like crazy. The last year and a half, the space shuttle's always had a second shuttle on the pad because our astronauts are on suicide missions. They know that any time
we'll have to get that when we come back. We have to step away for a break. And we'll find out what's this secret space station up to. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Gordon Giannotto. Okay, Gordon, when we went away for break, we were talking about this secret space station, and you said it's a joint Russian-American space station, a secret space station, out beyond Mars. And so the question was, okay, what is this space station doing out there, out beyond Mars? What are they up to out there?
Well, they're doing things so they can't be spotted from Earth is basically all they're doing. But if you
mean they're playing hide and seek out there?
Men of saucers in World War II.
Wait a minute. They're playing hide and seek. It's like let's just go out there and hide so people can't see us from Earth.
But if you remember the Nazis who developed space travel, it's never been clarified whether they actually did invent saucers and whether a group of them somehow found it to safety after World War II. You've heard that stories, I'm sure.
Sure, sure.
Okay. Well, the thing is that it's similar with the United States and Russia. There's only a few on the inside of this. We're talking a couple dozen people. We're not talking thousands. We're not talking armies. We're not talking anything near like our naval fleet in the oceans on Earth. We're talking about a group that's so secret, the rest of the secret group doesn't even know about it.
Okay, and what do they do? Why are they out there?
They're trying to develop more science, because the science they have won't allow them to leave the solar system. So that's very distressing. They'd love to figure out how to leave the solar system, but they haven't yet.
What prevents them?
Just like they got some more advanced toys to play with, but you can't really do anything with the toys.
So what's preventing them from leaving the solar system?
They haven't figured out how to do it. The distances are great.
Okay. So that would make it make sense when we hear stories about the military or the secret government or whatever people want to call it, that are involved in trying to develop technology to open these interdimensional portals. That would make sense as to why they're trying to do that.
Exactly. And that raises a whole point that concerns this object around the sun, too, that I can tie together if you like.
Okay, please do.
Okay. You have to realize that there are as many extraterrestrial races as there are types of ants in South America. I mean, it's beyond measure. And as many as can come here are here. So they've got all kinds of objects. Now, I'm sure a lot of your listeners, probably 99% of them, have seen the movie The Fly. Remember that movie?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Now, this is the lovely part. Third-dimensional extraterrestrials, by and large, are selfish. You wouldn't want to have anything to do with a single one of them. Okay? And all the unselfish ones, and some of the selfish, are fourth-dimensional, and they're not here physically, so they could be here and you can't see them. So if a third dimensional extraterrestrial tries to do fourth dimensional things, they need a stargate like the chamber in the movie The Fly.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the same results. Very, very uncertain.
Are stargates a reality?
Yes, they are, but they're not third dimensional apparatus that you would trust to use. If you had one in your house today, you wouldn't dare step foot in it.
Why is that?
Because when you come out on the other side, you might be half a fly, half human and half fly. You might be half immersed in the metal of the case. You might be mixed with the fibers of your shirt.
All right, so we've heard a lot of stories that there were some ancient stargates here on this planet. Are those stories reality or are they fiction?
They're reality for fourth-dimensional beings, but not for third-dimensional. So like I say, if you had one, you wouldn't walk through it. You'd be scared to death because you could come out the other side and have your hands all of a sudden growing out of your head, or your legs are mixed in with the fiber of your pants.
Mm-hmm. So the fourth dimensional beings could use the stargates to come here and to leave here.
Exactly.
But we, being third dimensional, cannot use them.
And not only that, but the third dimensional have to pilot just like we do. We have to, like, calculate a trajectory and head towards it and hope we get there. The fourth dimensional navigate not only their location but the time in which they arrive. So navigation is a whole level above what you might imagine.
Okay, so now I'm going to take us back to a question that we've talked about. And because we've branched off from there, we've gotten some additional information. And so if we were in court, I might say this is a redirect. So you're a lawyer. Would you agree that something cannot be true and false at the same time?
Oh, boy. You like to have fun. Well, lawyers are trained to argue any position. So you could get me to argue that they could be true and false, and you could get me to argue that they could never be true or false.
Okay. I understand that lawyers are trained to argue any point, but they're also trained, and as a matter of fact, it's part of the law school entrance exam, to test you for logic. Would you say that logically a thing cannot be true and false at the same time?
I would say that, yeah.
Okay. That being the case, this thing about whether we have a space fleet or not, and then the Zeta Talk information that there is no space fleet that's going to be capable of taking the elite off of the planet, it would seem that that's the conundrum that we have. We have one that says true and one that says false about the same event. I'm wondering again, how can we resolve that?
Because I'm trying to tell you that if we have these space fleets, we don't have a whole navy out there, a whole army. We just have a few of these things. We're talking about a couple of dozen people, and they cannot save themselves from pole shift, because there's going to be a hail of rocks. The tail of Planet X is millions of miles long, and it's just solid gravel and boulders. And it is going to sweep through the inner solar system and take out everything that's in space, all of our communication satellites, the space station. Last week, the astronauts in the space station had to get into their escape pods because their radar showed some stuff was closing in on them, which they called space debris, but was actually rocks from the tail of Planet X.
Okay.
So,
all right. So the deal is,
none of that stuff up there is going to survive. You cannot survive in space, in the solar system, when Planet X comes through. End of story.
Okay. Now, we've heard stories that the Russians, us, and then the Russians and us as a joint venture, that we all have some bases on the moon. We've heard there's an American base. We've heard there's a joint U.S.-Russian base. We've heard there is an E.T. base on the moon. And this is related to, I'll tie it into what we were talking about, but is there any truth to those stories that we have these bases on the moon, us, the Russians, and then us and the Russians? Ah, a break just took over, so we'll have to get the answer to that when we come back. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Gordon Giannotto. And, Gordon, I had to stop you in mid-sentence as you started to answer. So the floor is yours.
Okay. The United States has been to the moon. A lot of the footage that was shown was actually produced on a soundstage in England, but we did go to the moon with our equipment. And the reason why they had it on a soundstage was because there's alien debris everywhere. And I had discussed that on a previous show. The Russians, I don't know that clearly they haven't gone there with their own equipment, but the ETs or the United States might have taken them there. But there is no, and there has never been, a United States base on the moon or Mars. There may have been some temporary structures for a visit, but there is no base on the moon or Mars from the United States or Russia, or on any other body, including Mars or the dark twin of Earth. But on the backside of the moon, there is a huge alien base, and it's not just one alien group. It's several, and they're all selfish, and they're all third dimensional, and you wouldn't want to go there if you were, if it was offered to you. You're better off refusing.
So what of all these reports, people that say that they have been to our base on the moon, or they've been to our base on Mars?
Well, Mars, we have been there much more extensively. But like I say, we have been to the moon, but we have no interest in staying there because you've heard of the Project SERPO?
Yes.
SERPO is a story about a Stargate that was used to move a bunch of volunteer military people to this imaginary planet called SERPO, where people are vegetarians and they use beasts of burden. It's a desert planet, and that's all lies. That's completely made up. But there is an element to that which is true, which is that at the request of the MJ-12 and the secret government, the aliens did set up a base on the backside of the moon and on the dark twin of Earth for volunteer U.S. military personnel to go live, because people on Earth wanted to know how can we get ready to live on other planets. And the best way to do that would be to send a dozen or two dozen troops, male and female, to live on the backside of the moon and to live on the dark twin. And in both cases, the experiments were utter dismal failures. The people became depressed, wanted to leave, and finally the experiment was ended by executing them. And so
you mentioned in a previous show, in fact two previous shows, part one and part two, we talked about this dark twin of Earth. We have new listeners every night, and so we for sure have some listeners who have not heard that discussion. We don't have the time to revisit all of it, but very briefly, tell us what we're talking about when we talk about the dark twin of Earth.
Okay, originally the Earth was in orbit between Mars and Jupiter. It was a lot larger. Planet X came through, one of the moons hit the Earth, bashed off a lot of water and solid matter, and shot the Earth like a pinball into orbit around the Sun. And the dark twin was already in orbit around the Sun. It's the same size as of what was left of the Earth, and the Earth found a perfect place to enter orbit around the Sun in balance with the dark twin. So the dark twin is a planet that is black and volcanic, has no life, has no atmosphere, has no water, and is very difficult to see. It has a blue-black appearance, and it's always on the opposite side of the Sun. And nobody ever knew about it except NASA, JPL, some of the astronomers who you've mentioned before had detected perturbations in the orbits of Neptune and Uranus and Pluto, and calculated that there must be another body. And the actual reason for those perturbations is the fact that the dark twin is on the other side of the Earth. But when the Earth stopped in its orbit, when Planet X came into our orbit going the wrong way, and because gravity pushes, it stopped the dark twin, it stopped the Earth in its orbit, the dark twin caught up to us. Now, the reason why that's important is because the only people who have ever, all these channelers, all these ET telepaths, all of everybody, ancient prophecies, ancient religious texts, nobody ever mentioned the dark twin except for Zeta Talk. And they described it, and then all of a sudden NASA's taking pictures of it next to the Sun.
You know, you mentioned the Earth stopped, and I got an email from someone who said planets cannot stop in their orbits or in the spin of their axis, and that it would take something more massive than the Sun to do that. Now, I want to say this for the audience. You will often hear me mention things that are in what you call the Bible. I'm not a religious person, but all ancient texts, and the Bible is 66 ancient texts, all ancient texts contain interesting, sometimes quirky, and sometimes scary information. And so I offer this, if you, you know, the idea that the earth cannot stop. There is a place, not only where the earth stopped, it's in the Bible, there is a place where the earth stopped. There is a place where the sun, its movement in the sky, went backward by 8 hours. Okay? Now, I'm not asking you to believe that that's a true story, but what I am saying is this isn't something new, this idea that the earth stopped or has stopped. It's not a new idea. It is in ancient texts. For those of you who are religious, it is in your Bible. Not only stopped, but in fact, the sun appeared to move backward across the sky by 8 hours. That means that the earth rotated backwards on its axis.
You're exactly right, Kevin. The place in the Bible is Joshua chapter 10, and I suggest even you people who've never read the Bible find the book of Joshua in the Bible, turn to chapter 10 and read that description. And that was exactly 3,657 years ago, the last time the planet X came through the solar system. Your callers or your people that have contacted you are correct in that nothing stops the core from turning. However, they are wrong to assume that it would take a massive body to stop the Earth. Planet X is 4 times the size of Earth, but its magnetic field is 23 times. But you've got to understand, there is no proof anywhere in all of scientific history as to whether gravity pushes or pulls. And if you listen to part one of my interview, you'll see I discussed that almost. One of the first things I discussed was that gravity pushes. And this is something I figured out on my own when I was studying how do UFOs work? How do they propel themselves? And well, so what happens is you have Planet X coming one way and you have the Earth coming the other way, and they're both pushing, and they just come to a stop. Internally, their own cores are still spinning. The caller or the person that contacted you is correct. Nothing changes the core. But, oh, yes, the Earth can stop in its orbit, and the sun can appear to move backwards. And that is very plainly written in chapter 10 of Joshua in the Bible in the Old Testament.
Well, as I told you about gravity, I'm not sure whether the Earth has gravity or if the Earth just sucks. But one way or the other, we get held down to the surface. The force of gravity is not very strong.
No.
And, I've talked about this on the air. You can overcome the force of gravity with a toy magnet. You have some iron filings laying on a desktop, and they're laying there because of the force of gravity. And with a weak toy magnet, you can just pass that over them, and they will defy gravity. They will respond to the force of magnetism, which overpowers the force of gravity that's holding them to the table. So it's not that strong a force. We think it is, because it holds us down. But if a toy magnet can actually overcome the power of gravity, if that can happen, then gravity is really not all that strong. We have temporarily, I think, lost our guest. He's got some problems on the internet at the moment. He'll be back with us momentarily. we hear a lot about Planet X. We hear a lot that about, you know, that it's real, that it exists, that it's, some people say it's on its way here. Others say, what do you mean it's on its way? It's here. It's in our solar system already. So let's talk about Planet X for a moment. Is it in our solar system already?
It's not only in between our solar system. It's in a, if you drew a line between the center of the sun and the Earth, which is 93 million miles apart, those two objects, just off of that line, just enough so that it doesn't show up as a silhouette on the face of the sun, is Planet X, 30 million miles from Earth right now. And it can't go forward because the Earth is blocking its path, and the Earth can't go forward because Planet X is blocking its path.
So you're telling us that the Earth is not at this moment swinging through its normal orbit.
Exactly. And not only that, but right behind the Earth is the dark twin that came around the sun expecting to be on the opposite side of Earth, but the Earth was stopped and it came up and it got stopped. And then Venus came around and it got stopped. So blocking Planet X right now are three objects: Venus, the dark twin, and the Earth.
How do you know the Earth is stopped?
NASA has pictures of the dark twin, which I sent to you before my first interview, and you did put on your video.
Yeah. Yeah, but how do we know that the Earth is stopped in its orbit?
Well, that's my most frequently asked, difficult to answer question.
Okay.
And I myself do not have an exact way to prove it to you. Mm-hmm. But I will say that the Planet X is in the same plane. There are people that say, well, Planet X is in the future. It's going to come from below the ecliptic and then up into the plane of the solar system. But it's in that plane right now. And it's at the same level as the Earth and the Sun. So if you drew a line between them, the Planet X would be a little bit off to the side, but it's not below or above. But Planet X is laying on its side, so its north pole is pointed at the Earth like a flashlight. And if you buy two magnets from Radio Shack and you stand one up on your desk and you have the other one come in towards it, you'll notice that the one that comes in towards it horizontally tries to knock the vertical one over. And we're the vertical one, and what we're getting is this huge wobbling of the Earth. So you have what is normally in the northern hemisphere a west to east jet stream, and in the southern hemisphere an east to west jet stream. What you have is the Earth is going back and forth wobbling. What it does is it rolls to the left, back, and then it comes around to the right again. And when it does that, it creates these huge loops in the jet stream. So you have tropical air going north, and you have Arctic air coming south, and the reverse in the southern hemisphere. So you get these incredible weather conditions where I've mentioned this before. In January of this year, Maine, where I live, was warmer than Havana, Cuba. And all this year in Texas, I think it was a month ago, they had a 100-degree temperature change in one day. And I have a picture that was taken in England. There was a 75-degree temperatures and sunny in one town, and the next town over, it was snowing, like 2 or 3 inches of snow. These are not what you would call normal conditions. But they're normal conditions if you read the Old Testament and you read about the plagues of Egypt, because pole shift occurred when the Jews left Egypt. And that was the time of the pole shift. And all the plagues occurred before that, which is supposedly one of the reasons why the Pharaoh decided to let the Jews go. Well, there is some indication all that's historically true. It isn't just something in the Bible. But those plagues, the drought, the starvation, the failure of the crops, these are the things that we have going on now. Of course, the governments aren't helping by turning corn into fuel, etc., but we still have these problems where we're getting too much rain, not enough. The food supply is just about ruined. So the Zetas say, and believe me, if all the other things they say are possible, then this is possible too. They say that they are moving the Earth below and above the ecliptic to simulate the seasons. So, but people ask me, how can I prove it? I don't know how you can. But I can tell you this. if you pay attention, you'll see sometimes the moon is so high in the sky that here in Maine, the shadow of the moon on the full moon covers only my feet. And that should never be.
You know, I've also gotten reports from listeners, and we've talked about it here on the show. As a matter of fact, this was several months ago, maybe last year, that the moon seems to be moving. In other words, it's not where it's supposed to be, and it doesn't follow the path it's supposed to follow across the sky.
And not only that, it wobbles itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the face of the moon and you see there's a pattern of where the craters are and where they called mare, which is the sea, the Latin word for seas, and then you'll notice in the space of an hour or two, the moon will actually, the face of it will actually turn. So if you look at one distinct detail that's up, straight up, a couple of hours later, it's off to the side. That shouldn't be happening in an hour either.
All right. I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. And I know that you will have some questions by what we've heard here tonight. You will have some comments. You will have some questions. And I want to give you the opportunity to talk with our guest. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you live outside of the USA and you live outside of Canada, I understand that an international long-distance call can be very expensive, and for that reason, I have on the website something called a flash message option. It is only for those who are outside of Canada and outside the USA, and it is there because international long-distance is expensive. So if you need to use that, you can. You go to my website, scroll down to the picture about tonight's show, and then right above that picture, you'll see a link that says Flash Message. And you click that and send me your Flash Message, all right? If you're in the USA or you're in Canada, please use the telephone lines. And the main number is 623-444-5889. So, Gordon, let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent.
Hi, Brent.
Gordon, I'm going to tell you something I've heard, and then I'm going to ask you a question. I have heard that if the elitists, I don't call them the elite because all they are is a bunch of bullies, powers of wannabe. If they are successful in getting off the planet, they will not be allowed to return. Now, here's a question for you. All the third dimensional beings that are in this solar system, what's going to happen to them?
Brent, that's a great question. That ties into whatever this object is around the sun. Any beings that are on the Earth, when the Earth goes to the fourth dimension, which is going to happen in about 100 years. So I, being age 62, I don't expect to be seeing, like to. But anyone here on the Earth is going to be fourth dimensional. That includes third dimensional ETs. Well, in fourth dimension, they have to be separate. All the selfish will be on selfish planets, and all the unselfish will be on unselfish planets like the Earth. So, a lot of the third dimensional ETs liked these games. They liked being mixed in with unselfish people because they can try and recruit more selfish people. So, they really don't want to go to the fourth dimension. So, the Council of Worlds and other unselfish ETs have offered to relocate them to other third dimensional planets. And that actually is taking place in part because deep in the Earth, there are several different groups. Not the Earth is not hollow, but there are different groups like Men in Black, reptilians that are third dimensional, and they do not want to go fourth dimensional. So they're being actually relocated at the defense of the unselfish ETs to other third-dimensional planets. But all the third-dimensional selfish ETs that are not on the Earth, they're going to see the Earth suddenly wink out, like it disappeared. Like, where did the Earth go? And they're not going to be able to figure out, unless they've been told, that we went to the fourth dimension. And that's why so many extraterrestrials are here right now watching this happen. So I think that object around the sun, I mean, it's not a fiber, obviously, and Kevin's made that clear. That is some sort of a habitation or an abode or a moon or something. And it would make sense when something gets to be too large that they would use a natural object as their base. That's definitely a solid object, and it probably, I mean, I would say the chances are that that's 99% selfish third-dimensional ETs, and they're for the fun, but they're going to stay off of the Earth so they don't have to go fourth-dimensional, because they like this game of mixing in with unselfish people and trying to trick them. And that's what the elite have been, it happened to the elite. They got tricked. They were extraterrestrial.
Hey, Gordon, your audio is breaking up so badly we cannot understand what you're saying.
The extraterrestrials have lied to this on Earth.
Okay, Brent?
And,
okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889 is the number to call. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Thank
Hi,
you.
Jerome.
Mr. Gianni Noto, 3,500 years ago, you're saying Planet X did the same routine, and were the people living there subject to the same process, meaning the third dimension go into the fourth dimension?
I don't want to talk over your question like I did when you called the other day. No, this is the first time ever, and this is a one-way trip. This is like an ascension or something similar to that. This is like going to a higher frequency, because there are so many unselfish people on Earth that finally we've earned that right to go to another level of consciousness, a higher frequency, a higher vibration, where we will be more intuitive, our heart center will be stronger, we'll feel more love and kindness, we'll be more telepathic, we'll live longer, we'll be healthier. We won't have as many distressful things happen. So all the previous. Now, you've got to remember that this.
Gordon, I hate to do it, but this is another break. So, Jerome, you hang on. Gordon, you hang on. And we'll be back, folks, right after this.
Listening to the Kevin Smith Show, talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, healing medicine for the mind.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. On the telephone with us from Pennsylvania, Jerome, and Gordon, you were answering his question, which is, you know, when this Planet X came through last time, did they go to the fourth dimension then? And you were telling us, no, it was this is going to be a one-time deal.
Exactly. And I just want to say, Jerome, that's such a good question. I think you've been doing some homework. When the moon of Planet X smashed into Tiamat and knocked us like a billiard ball, what was left of us, into the present Earth orbit, had to be at least a billion years ago, maybe 2 billion, because the evidence of the plates on the Earth, like Pangaea and previous arrangements of the continents, show that we've been in this present position with continents above the water for about at least 2 billion years out of the 4 billion that we've been here. So this is the first time that, and so every 3,657 years for 2 billion years is a lot of returns of Planet X. And this is, you can look at Planet X as a natural event, but it's a third dimensional planet. And when it comes through again, it's not, they're gonna, the Anunnaki, the selfish human ETs that created us as slaves, are gonna look at Earth, and we're not gonna be there. They're gonna go, what happened to Earth? But this is the first time ever. Like, imagine if somebody like Mother Teresa, if that was a saint, you know, if there is a saint, then she probably qualified. And she, on her death, would go to a dimension. She would never need to be reborn on a third dimensional planet. And in the whole history of the universe, no planet has ever gone to the fourth dimension with people on it at the time. And that's what's new this time. That's one reason that there are so many extraterrestrials here to see what happened. They can't even imagine. And this has been arranged because there are so many good-hearted, unselfish people on Earth now that we've earned it. And there will continue to be those people on Earth. And Earth will be an unselfish planet. So it will be invisible to the third dimension. This has never, ever happened before. This is all new.
Okay, Gordon, you need to sit back from your microphone a bit because you're breaking up again. Mm. Yeah, there you go. All right. So, Jerome, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does, Kevin. I have one other question.
All right.
And this is just, Gordon mentioned Council of the Worlds.
Yeah.
I never heard that phrase before, Council of the Worlds.
Okay. Gordon, you want to elaborate on the Council of the Worlds?
Well, that's the term that Zetok uses. I've heard other things like Confederation of Planets, but you have to imagine that being that at the higher levels there is a separation of selfish and unselfish, that there are some sort of a mediating to keep people from destroying you. And that's the same group that's keeping the United States from nuking Planet X, which is what the whole plan was from the word go. I didn't get to mention that before, but I want to add it from. We've been trying to send nuclear bombs up to Planet X to blow it off its course so that we wouldn't have bullshit.
Okay, Jerome, thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Gordon.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, Gordon, you want to remember to set back away from your microphone because you're overpowering it and it's clipping. All right, callers, the telephone is open, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan of Washington State.
Hello, Ryan.
Hi, Ryan.
Oh, long time no talk.
Yeah, I thought you lost your telephone.
Well, I just thought I'd let you know that I'm still here and still listening. I just been mostly listening. I just haven't picked up the phone and called in, but I'm still here.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're back in the stream with us here.
Well, I just have to disagree with, with most of the stuff that the guest is talking about.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to be harsh. I'm just trying to say that I just think that that 2012 is going to come and go, and all this doom and gloom about the pole shift and all this happening. I'm not going to sit around and worry about what's going to happen. You know,
mm-hmm.
And I respect the guests, and I'm not trying to be combative here.
You just see it differently.
I just think that this gloom and doom stuff needs to. People can go overboard with it, you know. And I respect the guests, though. I'm not trying to be mad at me.
Well,
I disagree, that's all.
Yeah, and you've heard me say, I personally think December the 21st, 2012 is significant because it comes after December the 20th and before December the 22nd. I don't personally see that that date is a significant date. But I'll tell you this. The idea of Planet X and somehow that's married up with December the 21st, 2012 is something that's two completely different stories that got welded together by other people. The Mayans say that December the 21st, 2012 is the end of an era. Others have taken the arrival of Planet X and married it to that date. I don't think that we're about to see an earth-busting event, but I do think what we're about to see is something more than we've ever seen in known history. I do think we're about to see, and we are already seeing cataclysms on a greater scale than we have ever seen, and I think that's going to continue for a while.
I think it's going to calm down after 2012, but, you know, Zachariah Sitchin, last time I heard him speak before he passed away, said that he doesn't think that, that according to him, it won't be for another 50 to 60 years before Planet X starts coming
in. And if I could address some of these issues...
We're going to let you do that, Gordon, just a minute.
I respect the guest, but I just politely disagree. And I just think that none of these, the world's not going to end in any time soon.
Okay, yeah, we got you. We understand. And it's quite all right to see things a different way. Gordon, you wanted to comment.
Clearly, Zechariah Sitchin is right about everything except the date. So I agree with you that the date, he said a different date. That's true that he did say a different date, but he's wrong. But 2012 with the Mayans, that's trying to mix a Gregorian calendar and these other calendars. And it's not the end of the world. It's a change.
Mm-hmm.
And it may happen before then, it may happen after that. As soon as Planet X can leave, that's when it happens. Planet X will come to 14 million miles from the Earth. It will be almost as big as the full moon, and that's when pole shift will happen. Now, his record keeping goes to hell, and I would venture to guess that you probably haven't had any experience with extraterrestrials like I have. And I've seen saucers all my life, and I've had ETs talk to me in my head. I've had waking visions, and I've had incredible dreams. And when I looked around in 2006 to see who was saying what I was saying, and I found Zeta Talk, I was jumping up and down with joy. I would venture to say, if you would read some of the websites, you would find that there's far more accurate information in there than you ever imagined. And I would bet money that you haven't read anything on that website. But if you really want an experiment, why don't you join PoleShiftNing.com and ask your own question, which will be put to the extraterrestrials, and the answers are published every Saturday morning. And if that doesn't blow your socks off so far you can't find them again, I don't know what will. But the difference in the future is not that we're going to be dead, not that the Earth is going to end, but that if I ask you a question now, you search your brain thinking, where in all those bits of information is the answer to the question I ask? But imagine that after this change to the fourth dimension, that you can just put your hand on your heart and you know anything you need to know that ever was or ever will be, and that you have an entirely different way of linking with the rest of the people around you and the rest of the Earth. And it's a change that you couldn't write about if you're a Mayan. You couldn't say from the third dimension what the fourth dimension would be like. So that's why they stopped writing about it, because it would be meaningless as a third dimensional being to describe the fourth dimension.
Okay. I don't know if Ryan is still with us. Let me check. Nope, he is not. Okay, I was going to ask if that answered his concerns. But it is, you know, there are a lot of people who buy part of what you're telling us about and not other parts. They see, it's not they think that you're lying so much as they think they have a different interpretation of what they think is coming. Yeah, and so, you know, folks, I want you to understand, if you see it differently, it's quite all right. As I've told Gordon, and I have said to you on the air, if I'm wrong, I'm going to find out at exactly the same time you do. The good thing about this one, though, Gordon, if I'm wrong, the whole grid goes down, and nobody can call me or email me and tell me, aha, I told you so.
Well, we're all going to be in that position, and I don't necessarily look at it as a bad thing, because yes, we have a lot of possessions, yes, we have a lot of toys, but people are mistreating each other every single day. And if you have everybody on the earth being unselfish and kind, then you don't even need a government, you don't need laws, you don't need a religion, you don't need banks. Think about it. To me, that doesn't sound so bad. Sure, we'll be living in the year 1825, technologically speaking, but that doesn't mean that you have to be suffering. Plenty of people had excellent lives in 1825.
Do you think that existence in the fourth dimension will be something akin to what we saw in the movie Avatar?
No, we won't be avatars. We won't be projecting ourselves.
No. I'm not talking about the people who projected themselves. I'm talking about the natives to whom they projected themselves.
I don't know if we're flying through the air like that, but there'll be a great relationship to nature and all of consciousness that is so different. It'll be so heartwarming and loving you know, people are going to be in touch with what's real.
All right, we have a break coming up here in about 30 seconds. And when we come back from this break, we will be on final approach for the show, meaning, of course, that we have only a few minutes left in the show. So if you have a question or if you have a comment for Gordon, get ready, because we will take one or two calls. We'll have time for one or two calls immediately when we come back from this break. And then we're out of here for the evening. All right, we shall return in just a moment.
From the United Kingdom, and you are listening to the fantastic Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I don't have a caller online, Gordon, but we have a flash message from New Zealand. And it refers back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. This is from Mark in New Zealand. He says, we are automatically assuming that the crescent-shaped core 2A object is located beside the sun. Okay, now I'll read the rest of this, but I didn't assume that. I said it's approaching the sun and it's near the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, the image we are viewing is two-dimensional, but we're talking about three-dimensional space. The object could be located many millions of kilometers beyond the sun in its orbit around the sun. True. That's true. That's, in fact, what I said last night. In fact, it must be so. In this whole discussion, has no one considered the Roche effect an object located so close to the sun is unsustainable. It will be torn apart by gravitational forces and fall into the sun. Perhaps, but yes, in fact, in last night's show I discussed that. And nobody, as far as I know, has said that, I have used the phrase, it's right up next to the sun. So maybe that's how you're interpreting that. But in the call last night, Mark, when Brent called, our discussion about the position of light rays, I said if this thing is coming toward the sun, if it's approaching the sun, then the light would be, we would be looking at essentially what, from our perspective, is the top of this thing, and the light would be hitting the top of it. Okay? So, now if it's just passing by the sun, then we're looking at the side of it. If it's approaching the sun, we're looking at the top of it. And we don't know. But go back and listen to last night's show. Yes, all of that was addressed last night. But thank you so much for your input, and we look forward to more input and more flash messages from New Zealand. All right.
These are valid questions. I mean, we're looking at two-dimensional image, as you said, and we have no idea of how it looks in three-dimensional space.
That's true. That is true. Now, there are computer programs that can simulate 3D for us. And so perhaps somebody will take those images and we'll do something with them.
But Mark,
keep in mind, though, what I said tonight, and that is whatever this is, I think you can put the NASA notion that this is a fiber on the lens of the Core 2A camera. I think you can put that to bed, because this thing shows up in images from other cameras, not all other cameras. And some people, Gordon, have written to me and said, it ought to be in the images on all the other cameras. Well, no, because the other cameras are viewing in different spectrum. So if you take your camera outside and shoot a picture, it's going to take pictures in the visible light spectrum. It's not going to take pictures in the ultraviolet or infrared spectrum. But if you have a camera that is infrared, it will take pictures in the infrared spectrum. So you got that same situation with all those different cameras up there in space. They operate in different spectrum.
Kevin, that you need Homeland Security permission to own an infrared camera now.
Oh, well, yes. And I hope everybody realizes that last year the federal government changed the psychiatric guidelines as well, so that if you're a free thinker, or if you believe in peaceful disobedience, that is now defined as a mental disease, a mental illness, and you can be committed for that. They used to do that sort of thing in Russia. To the telephone, let's take this call, and then we'll be out of here. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, it's John from Mesa again.
Hello, John.
Hi, John.
Hey, I was thinking, as I recall, SOHO is a heliocentric satellite, which means it's locked in orbit around the sun, between the Earth and the sun, and so its relative position wouldn't change. And I was wondering, and I'm just throwing this out for discussion, along with anything else that might happen to be floating in the general area, rocks, debris, dust, smoke, whatever, would be rotating in that same location because it would be locked between the gravitational pull of the sun and the moon and the Earth.
Yeah, but this object is beyond the sun.
Okay.
Because we can see sun flares, solar flares, that get in the way of us seeing that object. So it's on the other side of the sun from us.
Okay.
Another point that's important to realize with this object is I've been telling you that gravity pushes and doesn't pull. If it pulled, these two objects would collide. The sun, being so much larger, would absorb this object, and that would be that. And here, whatever proximity it hasn't hit the sun, and that's because gravity pushes.
Okay, gravity pushes. John, thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, this object is on the other side of the sun. As we look at the pictures, it's on the right side, but beyond the sun relative to where the camera is. Because when there's a solar flare, the flare goes out between the camera and that object and obscures vision of that object. Some folks asked last night, Gordon, if this object is stationary or if it's moving, and I said, you know, I don't know. But I took a look at the pictures, the series of pictures over numbers of days. I couldn't tell. And then I talked with someone who downloaded all those pictures, put them into a video editing program and turned them into video. And he told me that this object does move. It's ever so slight, but it does move. It's not stationary, so it is moving. But it's been out there in those pictures apparently for the last 5.5 years. I could only find pictures going back to 2007, but I have read others who said they found pictures all the way back 5.5 years ago.
John didn't mention, but we had earlier, that there's two of these satellites, and one is ahead of the Earth and one is behind, and that's how they're labeled. One is called the stereo ahead and the other is called the stereo behind, so they're not in between the Earth and the sun.
But they are always pointed at the sun.
Always.
Always pointed at the sun.
They have a disc on a little arm that moves back and forth to always silhouette the sun perfectly so that they get these images.
Yeah, if they didn't block out the disk of the sun, then all you would get is light in these pictures.
Destroy the sensor.
Yeah. Okay, so let me just tell you that I do have James Horak coming to talk with us about this. So if you have an interest in this object, James Horak will be coming next week. He's going to talk with us about it. I got requests from a bunch of you for that. Got a bunch of requests to have Gordon back, and he's been gracious to be back with us tonight for part three. And so, we're not through with dealing with this thing. I am quite certain, Gordon, that there are people who absolutely are convinced it is a fiber that's on the lens that showed up 5.5 years ago out in the middle of space. But I just ask you to do one thing, folks. Please just let me know how it got on two cameras. All right, Gordon, hang in there. I'll talk to you in just a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for this evening. That's a wrap. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.